Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have one of my favorite guests on the line with me today. You know they're good if they come back. If they come back more than, well, once or twice, then, well, hey, listen, they're in a whole nother category. David Widener is a Market Watch columnist, and he contributes and has a lot of great stuff that we follow him on a regular basis, and love the opportunity to get David on the program. He has done a lot of things. Started as a newspaper reporter back in 1988 with the Lawrence Observer, Wall Street Journal in 2003. Continues writing as a Market Watch columnist. He's won multiple awards, including two from the Associated Press for column writing and investigative reporting, a regular contributor to Fox Business Network, and has his bachelor's from University of Kansas in English language and literature, letters, journalism, all those good things to support the great writing he does. Ladies and gentlemen, fanfare and much applause for David Widener. Welcome back, David.
Wow. With that introduction, I want to meet that guy. He sounds pretty smart.
Listen, I practiced that in the mirror for a whole 10 minutes this morning, so you know, I hope you enjoyed that. No, I really like having you on because I love the there's a bit of irreverence in your approach, which I like that, and I like your candid opinions, and so let's dive right in. A couple of recent articles that David wrote that really that caught our attention here and wanted to get him on the program, they're both fascinating, so let's try to cover both of them, David. The first was the article you wrote about the Bitcoin alternative that's a threat to Wall Street, and I know you've written about this and other subjects, and of course, Bitcoin has been kind of quote-unquote all the rage in terms of its potential to be an alternative currency and all these things. But is there any reality here? Is Bitcoin, are people using it? Is it anything that really is a threat? And then we'll get to what may be a real threat, which is fascinating that you wrote about. So first, talk to us a little bit about Bitcoin. Has it made any progress? Has it got any traction? Because I, for one, am very, very leery of anything that is, you know, this cryptocurrency that could be created out of thin air. I'm very suspicious of that. So am I alone? Am I in left field? Or are a lot of people concerned about it? And that's part of why it has this kind of failure to launch.
Well, you know, I had the same question. So I went in and checked in on it. There was a great conference, a big conference out here in San Francisco for Bitcoin and other alternative currency enthusiasts. And, you know, it's definitely happening, but, you know, this event was filled with true believers and true users, and they were complaining.
I mean,
they are unhappy with it. They're frustrated, and these are people who are actually using it, and it's a very small segment of obviously the population of the world and of the economy. And basically the takeaway that I got, this just isn't ready for prime time. I mean, it has fantastic potential. It has it does circumvent and cut out middlemen, and it's a cheaper way to do business. But it's not practical right now. It's just not practical. And even the people who are using it, they're looking at the same things we look at in the headlines, and that is, you know, this currency swings in valuation, is highly volatile, it's not accepted, you know. It's,
right.
And isn't that the thing with currency?
Right.
We need to be able to accept, you need to be able to pay somebody, they need to accept it as a currency.
Legal tender, that's what we need.
There's just sort of some obvious elephants in the room when you talk about Bitcoin. But does it have the potential to really change the landscape and empower especially underdeveloped economies and bring them into the global economy? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is it happening? Not yet.
Okay.
And I think the time frame, I think the people in the industry would suggest this is going to happen a lot sooner than at least I feel it's going to happen. I mean, if it's struggling this much at this point, I just find it hard to believe that it's going to happen anytime soon, David.
Okay, well, that's helpful because I've sometimes scratched my head and second-guess myself a little bit and say, am I missing something here? And is this developing? Because I do have suspicions about it. And I'm waiting for something to happen, and we hear reports of some of the troubles that Bitcoin has had in trying to get something going. But I understand that some people are going to embrace it quicker than others. So that's out there. And there, and Bitcoin, of course, as you said, David, is not the only alternative currency. We've covered this with other guests that are other things are out there that people have looked at. Now, what's really fascinating to me is that you mentioned in your article is that the Bitcoin may or may not become, or maybe it's premature, may become a threat to the kind of status quo and the way the system operates today in a good way. But there are other things that are more immediate and are more easily implemented and are more practical that could be a very interesting evolution of how or an augmentation of our current system. And I'm just really, really curious to get some insight from you. And you mentioned, and I'll steal your thunder here, the peer-to-peer lending. And I've heard about this, and we're starting to see some development here. I think that's really fascinating. So let's give us some perspective on what's going on with peer-to-peer lending, why that could be kind of a game changer, and what the potential is.
Yeah, well, I mean, just to explain it real quickly, I mean, basically peer-to-peer lending is, let's say I'm somebody who's looking out at the current investment landscape,
right,
and I'm seeing, you know, sub 2% yields on treasuries and bonds and CDs and all this stuff paying basically zilch. I mean, you can't even keep up with inflation as low as inflation is. And
yeah,
and you want to park your money and you want to make a good return. And these peer-to-peer lending places basically make loans. They take your money and they make loans, and you get to decide what kind of risk you want to take. And basically, people can on the flip side, people who maybe don't, you know, need a loan for something that maybe isn't traditional, or maybe they can't get a good rate from a bank, or even they, if they want a simple auto loan, they can get a better deal from this peer-to-peer place because there is so much less red tape. Back office work. I mean, it's automated. There aren't the fees and commissions and everything built into it. So for both sides, there, because of the lower cost and the ease of use, it creates better returns for investors,
okay,
and cheaper credit for borrowers. Well, you know, basically what it is traditional banking. It's,
right,
it's deposits and lending.
Right, right. Imagine that, savings and loans.
I think it is very much a threat to the banking industry. It's not going to wipe it out, but it's going to change. It's disruptive. It's disruptive in the same way that, you know, these companies that we hear much more about, Airbnb and Uber, are disruptive to the industries they're competing in. You know, we've seen the IPOs. People recognize this for what it is. And I believe that, you know, we're going to see this across the whole spectrum of financial services. And I believe that these kinds of sharing, whether we want to call it sharing economy or whatever label you want to put on it, I believe that this is the much more immediate threat to the financial services industry and the way that people traditionally, you know, attain credit and get returns on money they want to park.
Well, it's really interesting, David, because, you know, the one that you had mentioned was LendingClub, and they're doing an IPO. Has that happened yet?
Yes, it has.
Okay, and so they're publicly traded now.
Yes.
Okay, and so this is a company that acts as a, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of an intermediary for connecting lenders and borrowers, and these are the lenders that are involved with these transactions might be corporations or individuals.
It could be anybody. Anybody could,
okay,
jump in.
Okay, and so this is there still is an intermediary in the process, which is, as you said, matching up, you know, is considering the amount of risk somebody wants to take. So it's kind of a little bit like a matchmaker, you know, like we
yeah,
see, of course, some,
exactly,
of the, you know, so it's a matchmaker and putting the two together, and it eliminates that traditional lender role.
Exactly. And you know, when you think about it, I mean, We've seen this disruption to the financial services industry happen before. I mean, we think about how online brokerages basically disrupted the industry and changed the pricing.
Sure.
You know, I think that this is the next new wave. This is the next new wave of disruption to the financial services industry. We're going to see people turning more and more to these marketplaces, clearing houses, whatever you want to call them, peer-to-peer lenders, sharing economy, whatever you want to call it. But people are in the end, it's the economics of it, are the compelling point. And, you know, we see this in any industry. Price is the number one factor for any consumer looking at anything. They're going to look at the cheapest price yet and say, hey, am I getting a good deal on this? That's exactly what these services are doing.
Well, and the thing that really strikes me as interesting about this, I mean, this is no small business that this the Lending Club that you mentioned as an example. They went from $3.2 billion in 2013 of facilitated loans to almost double that, of $6.2 billion in 2014. I mean, this is no small dollar amounts we're talking about. And I imagine 2015 will line up to be probably another strong year for them.
Absolutely. I mean, you asked about, and Lending Club did have its IPO, and right now it's an $8 billion company.
Wow.
So
that's pretty strong.
This is happening very fast. Just the other day, I got a letter in the mail from Prosper, which is another one of these sites, you know, consolidate your debt, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so this is replacing sort of the traditional, I think, finance companies that,
right,
that we used to see out there. That this is going to be a real alternative. I think it's going to hit them particularly hard, and I think it's going to hit banks hard too. Because in the end, if I can save a quarter a percentage point or a half percentage point on a car loan or something like that, that's going to say put money in my pocket every month. And if I can, and same thing on the flip side, if I can beat a CD by a quarter point or a half point, when it simply by putting my money away for the long term, I'm going to, you know, why not?
Well, and the why not could be the risk, but if there are adequate safeguards in place and they are matching, giving this intermediary function of facilitating the loan, if they're giving the lender, the corporation or individual or whatever it may be, the opportunity to have the transparency and visibility on the risks they're taking, then that is a good question. Why not?
Right.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting, David. That's why I love having you on the program. David Weider, ladies and gentlemen, MarketWatch columnist, the writing on the wall. That's what he's doing, isn't he? He's talking about the writing on the wall. Let's grab a quick break. We'll be right back with David. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Ask a stockbroker how you should invest your money, and what do you think he'll say? Ask an insurance agent the same question, and what do you think you'll hear? Unfortunately, when an advisor is limited in what he can offer, he is often understandably biased. You'll need to ask questions. Ask advisors what products and services they can and can't offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This public service has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. David Widener on the line with me, MarketWatch columnist, and we are talking about a recent article he wrote. The Bitcoin alternative is a threat to Wall Street. And we're talking about the peer-to-peer lending, and we're talking about the Lending Club IPO and this new entrance or this evolving business of the peer-to-peer lending, and that goes around some of the traditional lending. And the interesting thing to me, David, is not only if we step back a little bit and say, well, you know, is this really a new concept? And it's really not. You know, for example, we've had for a long time, long, long time, we've had private equity, we've had private lending, we've had people back when, you know, people couldn't get loans for whatever they were doing with purchasing a home, or there was easier arrangement, or family members loaning to kids, or, you know, the seller financing. All of those things are forms of peer-to-peer or private lending, which is really all the same basket of the not being a, you know, the brick and mortar traditional lending arrangement.
Well, that's right. And it's not, you know, it's not unlike what, I think what you describe is not unlike what the stories that we hear about companies like Uber or Airbnb. Mm-hmm. People have always, you know, rented out their home to people. People have always, you know, had a vacation rental. People have always, you know, it's been a regulated industry. But people have, you know, you go to the airport, somebody's going to offer you a ride who's not a licensed driver.
Yeah.
We see that in, you know, in maybe poor neighborhoods, especially you see that a lot in New York or you're out in Queens. Well, there's a lot of unlicensed drivers who will give you a ride. What these platforms do is make these things much more simpler for, they provide a little bit of a structure, a little bit of a framework for people to access these businesses or these services easily. When I talk to people who use Uber, I'm not an Uber person, but I say these rides can often be more expensive than a cab ride. And
yeah.
They say, but it's so easy to use.
Exactly.
I love seeing that the car is coming and that kind of, you know, peer-to-peer lending isn't that much different.
Right.
Except the benefit and what people are looking for with lending or investing money is, you know, investors want a return and borrowers want cheap capital.
Right. Right.
And so that these platforms just bring people together.
It strips out the extra cost.
That's the big selling point, and that's why these things are taking off.
Well, and the technology, as with everything over the last 30 to 40 years, has been by making things easier and more accessible. And so you not only have these platforms, and the other thing, David, that really strikes me is, and I've lost track. I haven't kept up a current number because it kind of became old news. But, you know, Apple was sitting on over $100 billion in cash at one point. I don't know if they still are. They probably are. But, you know, you look at an Apple and the same thing, I'm sure, of course, is going on in corporate America and internationally, that Apple's sitting there with all this extra, quote unquote, cash. And, you know, they've got their dry powder. But, you know, let's say, you know, another company, I'll just get, you know, just off the top of my head, an IBM or somebody else says, hey, you know what, we could use a little cash. We don't really want to have to issue bonds and other things. It's a temporary thing. Hey, can we borrow that?
Absolutely. And I think people, when I first started covering financial services, I had a pretty basic understanding. There were banks and investment banks and insurance companies, but there's a whole spectrum. You know, when you think about something like GE Capital, there's a way that General Electric put its capital to use in finance.
Right.
You know, traditional companies, this isn't something that is coming out of left field and is like a new wave. Companies have always looked to put their cash to use. A lot of companies have dabbled in financial services in many ways simply to provide their customers access to capital because that's good business. If your customer wants to expand and is buying your product, why not provide the finance? And I think that, you know, and you can look at this across all industries. I mean, you mentioned Apple. Well, you know, Apple will finance your stuff. They do it through a bank, but they don't do it through their own capital. But this idea of providing credit to a customer base has been around forever. And as you mentioned too, there's private equity out there, there's what we call shadow banking, hedge
mm-hmm.
funds
mm-hmm.
on sort of this top level. There's alternative financing is not a new idea by any stretch. And I just want to make one more point in regard to these peer-to-peer lenders, you know. When you think about a community bank, well, what's a community bank? Usually it's mm-hmm. a bunch of investors
right.
in a community
right.
who say they want to provide credit to the market that they live and work. And so they pool their investments and they put capital and they file and they get a charter and they have a bank. And what do? They lend to the community. How is that different from having it happen in the virtual world where you have a website and you say, we're the people who want to lend money. We're the people who want to borrow money. Let's bring them all together. And I think it doesn't look exactly the same, but essentially it is exactly the same.
Well, and that's a great point, David, because then the next logical question, and maybe it's a little bit of devil's advocacy, is that, okay, well, if it is really in essence the same thing, what's is there anything that's lost in the process? Is it, you know, are we entering a non-regulated area, is the risk of non-regulation worth some, maybe some of the savings that are generated for both the higher return potentially for the investor and or lower cost for the lender, for the
well,
borrower,
I think
yeah.
That's the ultimate question.
Yeah.
Especially with any of these sharing economy companies. I mean, look at the trouble that Uber is running into. I mean, they're, you know, city councils, states, and municipalities are weighing whether or not they want to allow these businesses. I mean, and because they are very much unregulated. And I think that, you know, putting your money in a bank with FDIC insurance and into a virtual peer-to-peer lending service is, you know, there's a little bit of risk there. And, but, you know, I think there's the right kind of customer for these institutes. And not everybody is going to feel comfortable going to a lending club versus Bank of America. It's not going to be, some people are going to pay, are going to be willing to accept less of a return in exchange for safety. And that's totally fine.
Right, right.
But I think a lot of people, especially given today's investment landscape, are going to be looking for things like these to give them another place to maybe not put all, you know, their whole retirement, but to put in some money that they want to invest and get a little bit better return.
Well, you know what strikes me, David, and you'll find this, I think, very, very amusingly ironic, is that a lot of the action that has sparked all this is not just technology, it's the interest rate environment we're in, which is causing people to want to, you know, they're sliding down the risk curve, looking for more yield and looking at some of these other areas that you've talked about. And that's what's ironic about it is the central bank and the dominant banking system we have is really ironically what's causing lending, and again, no pun intended, but lending to this evolution.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for most investors or most people who are looking, who have some capital, they want to invest, they want to pay for their kids' education, they want to retire, they really have two options right now. And basically they can get a low yield nothing, which is basically they're going to park their money and hope they can beat inflation, or they're going to invest in the stock market. And, you know, judging by just the volatility this week, that's a gut check every day.
Right.
So, you know, you've got two extremes there, and so there's a lot of room in the middle.
That's right.
For people to explore new things and go into and that's why I think these non-traditional opportunities are so appealing to many people, and that's why we've seen the rapid growth of places like Lending Club Prosper and all the B2B lending services out there.
Well, David, I think you're spot on. Let's grab another quick break. We'll be right back with David Widener, MarketWatch columnist, The Writing on the Wall. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. David Widener on the line with me. Always enjoy talking with David. You can tell we like to talk through these subjects. And I want to circle back around with, you know, again, with some of this alternative approaches and investing and people accessing capital. You know, another area I've seen this, David, and I'd love to get your thought on this, and this is the area of real estate. You know, again, trying to get more return, I'm seeing a lot of development in that area as well. You know, for the longest time, of course, we had these real estate investment trusts and things of the like, both liquid as well as illiquid versions of these things. But there's been a whole nother area opening up. And again, here again, the question about regulation. And that is the area where there are these websites and companies that will facilitate your purchasing a rental property or an ownership piece or slice of a rental property and using them as the facilitator. And they act as both a management, you know, a facilitator of finding the property and showing you what it is, and also acting as a property management company so that you get your dividend check in the mail.
Right. Well, you know, one of these companies I wrote about actually this week, and I just mentioned it, but it's called Fundrise. And basically investors can go there and park their money, and they can invest directly in what's called high-yield real estate. And for developers or people who want to go out and purchase properties and fix them up and you know, they get their project qualifies, and you know all these services are putting people together outside of the traditional banking system, outside of the traditional whatever sources people use for funding. And you know, this Fundrise company, for instance, is promising returns of 12-14% to investors. I mean, that's certainly going to get people looking. And you know, the idea that, hey, maybe I own a property, or maybe I want to get a property, or maybe I see a multifamily housing unit that I want to invest in, and you know, bringing all these people together. And it's, you know, it's interesting because I'm out in San Francisco, and one thing that's being talked about here is that, you know, the great irony out here is that crowdfunding is in many ways replacing venture capital. In other
words, that's remarkable.
So many sources, so many people who are investing in new technology, they come together through these peer-to-peer lines, and venture capital is getting squeezed out. It's getting squeezed out. You know, we've heard a lot about things like Kickstarter, and there's dozens of these marketplaces now. Well, and in a way, you know, the venture capital is sort of seeded its own demise, you know, in the view of a lot of market or technology people out here who work in the space, and they see it as a great development. They see it as, you know, this was always something, you know, investing in small companies was always something that was a little bit exclusive, but all of a sudden you're democratizing it and creating an even playing field where people, you know, maybe they don't have the money of Mark Andreessen or something like that. And they can, you know, the big VC guy, but they can take $1,000 and put it in one of these sites and find an investment that they like. And you know, the financial services landscape is changing in this way with real estate.
Well, I tell you what,
technology.
David, we'll have to have you come back and we'll talk some more about it. David Weiner, ladies and gentlemen, MarketWatch Commas, the writing on the wall. Thanks as always, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.